Well, this is my favorite part of the show. This is the part where we bring in somebody from the outside to interview, and this week is one of the most special weeks I've ever had in all the time that I've been doing this show. This is it. This is the pinnacle of it. I can't even imagine how it could get any better than this. But this next guest is a guy that took me from, I don't know, oblivion all the way up to oblivion where I am today. It's just amazing. I got so much to say. Anyway, this guy, he's an international speaker and best-selling author. He's one of the leading authorities on development of human potential and personal effectiveness, and I could personally vouch for him. He addresses thousands of men and women every year on how to be better people and teaches them all sorts of technique. And an amazing guy. Ladies and gentlemen, put your hands right by the radio. Put your heads close together. And please give a warm welcome to my guest this week, Mr. Brian Tracy. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Cash. How are you?
Oh, I'm sensational, but it'll get better. And I can't imagine how much better it could get now that you're on the air with me. This is like a dream come true.
Well, thank you.
Oh, man.
Very complimentary.
Thank you. I'm so excited. You know, one of the things that I learned from you and has to do about, I have to use a religious analogy. When I first started to do sales, I got involved with Tom Hopkins. And Tom, what he teaches is repetition is the mother of learning, and he teaches technique over and over and over again. And you, on the other hand, you teach the psychology of what it is. And to use that religious analogy, it's whereas if you teach a man, you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. You teach a man to fish, he lives forever. And you've taught me how to fish.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So, tell me, what's the secret to life?
Well, I just come back from a seminar in Philadelphia, and I think the most important secret to life, I think Norman Schwarzkopf summed it up in a talk that I did with him in Sydney a few weeks ago for 9,000 people.
Wow.
And he said the first secret in life, he said, is when put in charge, take command.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. Everybody's in charge of their own lives.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that the most important thing that we can do is take command, take charge, be responsible, accept that we're where we are and what we are because of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If there's something that we want, then get on with it and get it. And if it's something that we don't want, then it's up to us to change it.
Mm-hmm.
And people have to realize that they are powerful. They can do virtually anything that they want. They have no limitations except the limitations that they accept.
Mm-hmm.
So the key to success has always been to accept complete responsibility and to take charge of your life. Decide exactly what you want and then realize that you can do it if you want it badly enough and if you want it long enough and hard enough.
Okay. So now, is there any limitations to that? And does it start with goals?
Well, everything starts, I think in my estimation, everything starts with responsibility and then moves to goals. If you don't accept responsibility, then you don't even set goals. If you don't accept responsibility, then you don't do anything to achieve the goals.
Mm-hmm.
So my basic philosophy is to start with the goals, or start with accepting responsibility, and then write down your goals, and then you commit yourself totally to doing something every day to move toward the goals.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about limitations, most of the limitations are inside. You know, someone once said, what if everybody becomes self-confident and sets goals and works toward them? And the response is that there's no immediate danger.
Right.
The fact is that people live well within their limits. They're far too preoccupied with potential limitations than the reality suggests, than the truth suggests.
Right. Well, I so many of your quotes go like, for example, I absolutely believe that there lies within each person a huge reservoir of untapped potential for success, achievement, happiness, health, and greater prosperity.
Yes.
I mean, that's right from something that you've said before and has gone into writing.
Yes.
Or another one of my favorite quotes by you is, the potential of the average person is like a huge ocean unsailed. A new continent, you know it better than I do, a new continent unexplored, a world of possibilities waiting to be released and channeled towards some great good. And
yes.
And I live my life by that, and I guess a lot of people do as well. So now, how did you get started in this? How did you all of a sudden decide, well, I'm going to be the number one speaker in the world?
Well, I don't know that I am, but the
most
people, there's a psychological fact, Cash, that says that we seek as adults what we felt we were most deprived of as children.
Mm-hmm.
And fortunately, I had a deprived childhood. I didn't do very well in school. I had, you know, mediocre parenting and all those difficulties that everybody has.
Uh-huh.
And what they do is they can either depress you and cause you to feel sorry for yourself, or they can stimulate you and drive you to overcome them.
Right.
And the great success stories in America are people who have been driven to overcome their earlier problems by their own actions.
Right.
So every time you talk to a successful person, you find that almost invariably they had a difficult upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
They had a challenging upbringing which they rose up against. And I speak to thousands of people who have had a challenging upbringing, problems with their parents, difficulties early in life, and they spend most of their life crying about it. Most of the psychologists and psychiatrists' waiting rooms are filled with people who want to cry about their unhappy childhood.
Right.
At a certain point in life, you have to say, good, everybody has an unhappy childhood. Now get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
That was then. This is now.
Right. Well, I must be ready for the biggest success of it all. My childhood was a disaster.
Yeah.
When I was 4 years old, both my parents died. And, hey, here I am. And I got to tell you, I think that I'm so excited now that I know I'm going to be really successful.
Well, Nietzsche, the German philosopher, once said, what doesn't kill me makes me stronger.
Right.
And one of my favorite lines from William James of Harvard was, what cannot be cured must be endured.
Mm-hmm.
And you just develop that kind of philosophy. This philosophy, by the way, was first articulated by the Stoics in ancient Rome. The Stoic philosophy was the philosophy of acceptance.
Right.
Accepting the world the way it is. Peter Drucker calls it the reality principle,
mm-hmm,
or intellectual honesty. He says, simply continue to ask, what is the reality? And whatever the reality is, it is. Ayn Rand, in her famous book, Atlas Shrugged, basically said her whole philosophy of objectivism can be summarized in those two words, reality is. Most of our problems, according to psychologists, come from the process or phenomenon of denial. People don't want to face reality.
Right.
What they want to do is they want reality to be different than it is.
Maybe that's my problem.
Well, I mean, they want their childhood to have been different. My friend Wayne Dyer says,
right,
that it's never too late to have a happy childhood. And this is one of the most important parts of cognitive psychology that Dr. Martin Seligman of the University of Pennsylvania has discovered over 25 years, is that the way that you think and feel about yourself and your life is totally determined by how you interpret events to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore you find that superior people have a particular way of thinking. It's almost like superior people have a way of dealing with problems. Superior people have a particular way of thinking. And if you think the way effective people do,
right,
you find yourself to be happier and far more effective than the average person.
Right. Now, how do you figure out who's the effective person? Who is that?
William Maslow. I don't mean to keep quoting people, but William Maslow, Abraham Maslow, I'm sorry,
right,
studied what he called self-actualizing people.
Well, William Maslow, his brother, he of course, was a complete failure. That's why no one knows of him. But all right, Abraham, right?
Well, Abraham Maslow turned psychology on its head, and even today it's still upside down, because basically what he said is, rather than studying sick people and trying to draw common conclusions, let's study healthy people and try to draw some general rules for mental health.
Right.
So he interviewed hundreds of people and hundreds of people around these people to find people that he considered to be self-actualizing people.
Right.
People who are really basically at the top of their game.
Right.
They felt great about themselves and their lives. They were happy. They were energetic. They were centered and focused. They got along well. They had good relationships. They were successful in their careers. They were generally happy people. And he said, what are the common characteristics of these people? And so what we find is that if you interview successful people, you'll find that they all have certain characteristics in common.
Right. One of them, by the way, was wearing loose underwear. I actually asked, oh no, that was William Maslow I asked. No wonder it was wrong information. Okay, so anyway, what were you saying?
So basically what you say is how do successful people think, feel, respond in various situations? And whatever they do the same thing. And if you do the same thing, surprise, surprise, you start to get the same results and responses.
Right.
Both from the people around you, but also within yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So happiness is a choice.
That's right. I think, to just quote one of my favorite people, Wally Amos, happiness is an inside job.
That's right. And so basically happiness comes from the way you interpret the way things are going on around you. You get stuck in traffic, you can be mad and frustrated and angry and so on and so forth, or you can make a phone call, listen to an educational audio tape, think about what you're going to do, and just accept what cannot be cured must be endured. Next time I'll leave a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same situation, but your reaction to it determines whether or not you use it effectively or whether or not it ruins your whole day.
That's right. Well, one of the things that I teach in my training, and of course everything that I teach in my training seems to come from a derivative of something I learned from you, it has to be is that the only thing that we're in complete control of is the choices that we make on how to react to it.
Exactly.
Because we really are not in control of traffic. We're not in control of our health. We're not in control of anything other than the way we react to a situation that's put upon us.
Right. You find that successful people say, okay, what parts of the equation can I control? And then what they do is they do everything possible to control those parts. The rest of it, they let it go.
Right.
You know, you can if you know there's going to be heavy traffic, give yourself enough time. One of the most important things that successful people do, the top 2%, is they always allow themselves traveling time, mm-hmm. transition time, mm-hmm. buffer time, unexpected delay time. Unsuccessful people run the clock out, and then they find themselves, they have to be at work at 9 o'clock, and they're leaving at 9 o'clock, and they're all frustrated, and they say, oh, my life is a big mess. Well, the fact is, sir, you were sitting watching television for the last half hour. That's why you're late.
Mm-hmm. Now, Brian, you're out all the time. I think that Victor told me, by the way, Victor Risling, and I want to thank Victor for setting this interview up. Victor is like one of your right-hand people. How long has Victor been with you?
Victor and I have been working together probably 20 years.
Wow. Because I met him at one of your seminars a long time ago, when I called, you know, it's so surprising when you call somebody up that you haven't spoken to in many years, and they're still at the same number and for the same company.
Oh, yes. Well, Victor and I have worked at several different jobs. He and I work very well. He's my partner.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's an amazing man as well as you are. But the question that comes to my mind right now, here's a guy, Brian Tracy, you're traveling all over the world constantly. How many continents have you been to?
I've been basically on all the continents except for Antarctica.
Mm-hmm. Why? What's the problem there? No penguins are ready for motivation?
Whatever. No, I've traveled in more than 80 countries. I've spoken in 14 countries this year already.
Right.
I just came back from Southeast Asia where I spoke in about 6 countries.
Right. Now, how many languages do you speak?
I speak French, German, and Spanish.
And so when you were in Southeast Asia, were you giving it in English and was there translators or how does that work?
Well, there's some countries where English is the dominant second language and then there are other countries like Taiwan where I use a Chinese translator. And
right.
Indonesia, where I use an Indonesian translator.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, very, very interesting. And so now the people that come to your seminars, are they just general populace, or I'm talking in the foreign countries?
Well, this is a very interesting thing about seminars, and it ties into the seminar that we're doing next week.
Right.
We have done analyses of seminar attendees now for 15 years, and we find that there are two qualities that seminar attendees have. One is they're hungry. And second is they're ambitious, which
right.
basically ties together. And there's no other demographic. They're young and old, and they're wealthy, and they're starting out, and they're male and female and black and white and every single stripe. But the one thing that they all have in common, and it's the most amazing thing, Cash, because when they come together in a seminar, they all interact, communicate effectively. I mean, it's almost like it's a class reunion.
Right.
Because they all have that fundamental dynamic. They tend to be very honest in that they know that the only way that their lives can get better is if they get better.
Right.
So when they go to a seminar, they know that if I want to improve my life, I've got to improve myself. I've got to learn some critical things that I can do in order to change the person I am to get different and better results.
Right. Well, I can only speak for myself on this with personal experience, but you guys, you and Victor, you asked me to be on your video. It was called Introducing Brian Tracy, and it was Success is a Journey, and it was from 1989. Oh, my God, how many years ago was that? Don't tell me. I don't want to know. But when I first had met your tapes and got to your seminars, when I first started, I was in debt, serious credit card debt. I think it was over like $16,000 of credit card debt. And then I started taking your seminars, and the next thing I know, I started working for Dun & Bradstreet, and I became the Salesman of the Year. And then, you know, not only did I go from being in debt, but then I went into getting back money in my pocket, and then I went into serious debt because I bought a house. But I was like a government, you know? You know how it works? If you owe $10, you're a bum. If you owe $100,000, you're a successful businessman. And if you owe millions, you're a government.
yeah.
And I know what it was like. And you mentioned the fact of people being hungry. And you're not just talking about being hungry for food, because I know you do serve little snacks in the back of the room. You're talking about hungry for knowledge.
That's right. Well, you know, if a person has low self-esteem, and this is something we deal with in our courses, if a person has low self-esteem, if they don't really like themselves very much, if they're critical of themselves because their parents were critical of them, then they don't really have very high aspirations or goals for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
However, when a person starts to really like themselves and really think well of themselves, if their self-respect and self-esteem starts to go up, then it's almost like turning up the dimmer switch on their minds. They start to set bigger and more challenging goals. They start to get more excited about more distant possibilities.
Right.
It's interesting. There are several qualities of very successful people. One is that they have long-time perspective. This is based on 50 years of research at Harvard. It's really phenomenal. It basically said the critical attitude for success is that really successful people have long-time perspective. They look into the future 5, 10, 15, 20 years to decide where they want to be, and then they trace back to the present, and they say, what do I have to do every single day in order to make that future a reality?
Right.
And then every single day they work on it. We call this long-term vision combined with short-term focus.
Right.
So they have these two qualities. They have the quality of being able to be very clear about where they want to go, which is very clear goals written down, worked out, and planned. And then they have the ability to concentrate with tremendous focus on the most valuable thing they can do every minute that will contribute toward the achievement of those long-term objectives.
That's right. It's just it's what it takes, and it everything has a price, doesn't it?
Well, yeah. I had one of my graduates is a gentleman named Yuri who's from Russia. He came over from Russia about 5 years ago, and when he arrived, he had everything he owned in a cardboard box, and he arrived in New York and could not speak a word of English.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to basically stand on the sidewalk and keep talking to people who looked a little bit Russian until he found one who was.
Right.
New York has a large Russian community.
Right.
And he kept asking. He said, are you Russian? Do you speak Russian? Finally, someone did. He said, how do I get to Little Russia, which is the neighborhood in New York where the Russian immigrants agglomerate?
Right.
And he finally, someone answered him in Russian and showed him how to get there. His first year, what he did was he delivered pizzas out of a Russian pizza parlor, the Russian Domino's pizza parlor in the neighborhood,
because
he could only speak Russian. But he had a long-term vision. His long-term vision was to have his own business in America. It was been his dream for years. That's why he came to America.
Uh-huh.
And then someone told him, if you want to be successful in America, you have to speak excellent English.
Right.
You know, there's a very close correlation between how well you speak your native language and how much money you earn.
That's right.
So he began studying English, and he began studying my books and tapes.
Right.
Someone put them in his hands, so those became his study. So he learned about success, achievement, personal management, goals, responsibility. He learned about all of these things at the same time he was learning English.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of his first year, he got a job selling printing supplies. But this time he could speak enough English so he could sell to non-Russian companies. At the end of his second year, his English was so fluent he started his own business as a broker.
Mm-hmm.
By the end of his third year, he had sold something like $2 million worth of printing and made something like $400,000.
Wow.
By the end of his fourth year, which was last year, he made $600,000. He now moved to Los Angeles. He owns a Mercedes. He lives in a beautiful home. He's probably going to make $800,000 this year. And he's been here off the boat for 5 years.
Wow.
And he couldn't speak a word of English, nor did he have any education, experience, background, or anything else. But he had a vision.
Mm-hmm.
He had a clear vision, which he translated into goals, and then he translated the goals into daily activities, and he simply works on the activities every single day.
That's an amazing story. It's not quite the same story as my grandfather, because when my grandfather came over from Russia, he didn't have a penny in his pocket, although he did have like 100,000 rubles taped inside the jacket. But and also, not only that, he only spoke three words of English, and he was a multimillionaire when he died, but those three words were stick 'em up.
Great.
Anyway, you're on the air with Cash Landy on the Self-Motivational Comedy Experience, and we're talking with Brian Tracy, and we'll be right back. Stick with us. Okay, put it back up. Brian, this is phenomenal. All right, we're back with Brian Tracy. Brian, you are amazing. What can I tell you?
Well, thank you.
I have a question for you now. Appearance. How important is appearance?
Well, 95% of the first impression you make on new people is determined by your dress.
Mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely amazing. Human beings are highly visual. We know, you know, we're visual, we're auditory, we're kinesthetic. However, human beings initially, all human beings are highly visual, so the visual impact is enormous. And it's almost like you have a box, and the box is empty. And the very first appearance or very first impression you get of another person puts the first layer in the bottom of that box. That first layer then determines the perception or how that person will respond to you the second, the third, and the fourth time. That's why we say it's never too... It's very difficult to make a good second impression, a second good impression.
Right.
And so you have to make a good first impression. Mm-hmm. You know, the first impression actually sets people up for how they're going to respond to you when you open your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
In selling and in business, there is a correct business dress. I was talking to several hundred people about this yesterday.
Okay.
Is that there's a correct business address and I can tell in any audience, I can say who's successful and who's not.
Okay.
I can just go through the audience and can be right 80 to 90% of the time. I know who's successful and who's not.
Depending on what industry they're marketing to, is that correct?
It doesn't matter. You can tell because people who are successful give some thought to the way they appear to others under all circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
People who are unsuccessful, or here's an interesting thing. Sometimes people will be successful, but they will feel guilty about it.
Right.
So when they are not at work, where they look right, they will dress like bums.
Hmm.
And you see it all the time. You know, you see people in airports, you see people in restaurants, you see people on weekends who may be successful in their current work because they have natural talents and abilities and they work hard, but they feel so guilty about their success that when they get away from it, they dress like they just fell off a truck.
Right. Now, let's talk about that. I have a couple of questions about that, and I will come back to the dress, but feeling guilty. Now, sometimes I've noticed that when you're making a lot of money and you're doing a lot of sales, and I'm saying you're earning a lot of money, and there's a support staff around you that is not privy to that kind of income. Sometimes it's not a guilt feeling, but isn't the fear of saying, "Hey, look who I am, look what I'm doing," and then there's always this fear that they will look at you and say, "Oh, he's too successful."
Well, you find that successful, truly successful people don't make a thing of their success. In fact, there's a combined, almost like a neurotic complex in America, where we really admire successful people and simultaneously we resent successful people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very good reason for that. We admire them because the American tradition is that you can be successful as well. So we look at other people who are successful, and as Abraham Lincoln says, that some have been successful is proof that others may be.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that in order for us to adjust our own thinking to other successful people, we have to pull them down.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you an interesting thing, Cash. I tell my audiences this, is that the very worst thing that you can do is criticize other successful people.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you criticize other successful people, you set yourself up at an unconscious level to repel activities that will lead you to success. So people are niggly, criticizing, bad-mouthing, backbiting successful people. Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
He's successful, but he's overweight, or he doesn't do this, or something.
Right.
Whenever you criticize other successful people, there's a law from Aristotle that says whatever is expressed is impressed.
Mm-hmm.
So if you express a criticism about someone else, you actually impress it into yourself and set yourself up to avoid doing the things that will enable you to be successful.
That's right. Are you familiar? I call it the crab theory. Are you familiar with that?
Of course, of course.
All right.
There's another thing I tell people is don't ever criticize other successful people around your children.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you criticize other successful people around your children, they will grow up to believe that being successful is wrong. And what you do is you can sabotage your kids for life, or at least for years and years, by getting them to believe that other successful people are somehow bad.
Right.
And there's an awful lot of people, parents, when I say this, they just stop, because they had no idea the impact they were having on basically sabotaging their children's future.
Mm-hmm.
By continually carping about other successful people around the family dinner table.
Wow. I have actually never experienced that myself, but I understand what you're saying, and it makes perfect sense that if you're going to criticize someone else for their wealth, the children are saying, well, why would I want to be wealthy as well?
Well, there's a study that was recently done, a survey, and they asked young people in high school and college. And interestingly enough, today we are in the age of entrepreneurship. It was started by Reagan. It was semi-sabotaged by the Bush-Clinton high taxation regime, but it's basically coming back. People, young people, the majority want to own their own businesses. They don't want to work for large companies. They want to be their own bosses.
That's right.
Simultaneously, we have this other neurotic preoccupation, is if you ask young people, do you want to be successful in business, they say, yes, but I don't want to have to do the things that you have to do to be successful in business.
Right.
Well, here's the interesting thing. To be successful in business requires all of the finest qualities for which America stands.
Right.
It requires discipline. It requires tenacity. It requires integrity at extremely high level. It requires building high levels of trust. It requires planning and foresight and patience and perseverance. It requires continuous learning, education, creativity, innovation, risk-taking, entrepreneurship. In order to be successful, even in a multi-level marketing business, requires all of the best qualities that we would dream of our children having if they grew up. If you could say to a parent, what qualities would be most guarantee success for your children? They would write them all down. And Thomas Stanley has just written a book called The Millionaire Next Door. It's the continuation of his research into self-made millionaires in America. There are 3.7 million millionaires in America, most of whom are self-made.
Mm-hmm.
That means they started with nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he has studied and interviewed thousands of them to come up with a general profile of self-made millionaires. And the qualities that he comes up with are the basic qualities that made America great. They're the basic qualities that make a person great. And what has happened is by applying those qualities, these people just happen to have started with nothing and become self-made millionaires. But you can apply the same qualities to accomplish almost anything in life.
That's right. Now, money isn't everything.
Well, no, money isn't everything, but money is a scorecard. Most people who don't have money are preoccupied with it. People who do have money don't think about it that much.
Yeah. I think money is like air. You only realize it's a problem if you don't get enough of it. You know,
it's what Frederick Hertzberg called a deficiency need.
Mm-hmm.
I'll often say it's like being underwater or above water. If you're underwater, you think of nothing but oxygen.
Right.
If you're above water, even an inch, the preoccupation with oxygen goes away.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you're high enough above water, you're not preoccupied at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing that you did not mention, and I think is a really important thing, and tell me if I go astray. Well, I know I'm not going astray because I've heard you say it, and that is the amount of time that you have to put in. A lot of people think, well, I'm working for somebody, it's 40 hours, but the reality is nobody's really working for anybody anymore. Everybody's working for themselves. Isn't that true?
Well, yes, there's a lot of the best thinkers have come to the conclusion that we're reaching the end of the employee. It's interesting, about 200 years ago, we invented the steam engine, and the Industrial Revolution began. The Industrial Revolution went on for about 150 years, and during that time, people needed employees. Up to that time, it was basically individuals. Individual farmers and individual craftsmen were working, and they started to be bunched together in groups for economies of scale and manufacture. So the whole concept of the job was created. The job has not existed throughout most of human history.
Mm-hmm.
And in the second Industrial Revolution was the invention of mass production by Henry Ford, which completely changed the nature. It broke the jobs down into small parts so that hundreds of men working in a row, each person doing a small part, could create enormous numbers of automobiles. And Henry Ford was able to bring the cost of an automobile down from about $2,000 to $300 through mass production and make it available for everybody in America and eventually the world.
I'd like to buy one for $300 right now.
well, the next Industrial Revolution was the information age. The information age was the ability to process high quantities of information quickly. That was the beginning of IBM, the beginning of the computer, the 360, and then eventually the PCs, the faxes. Everything today is information. We're now in what is called the information age.
Right.
However, we're passing out of the information age into the fourth Industrial Revolution. The fourth Industrial Revolution is manpower or mind power. It's the human resource. So we've gone from industrial steam engine to mass production to information to human resource. We've literally come full circle to the first great natural resource and the last, which is the human mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the human mind is even more unlimited than the microchip.
Yes, that's true. Because you could think of something, but you can't get a computer to think the way you do, no matter how hard you try.
That's right. So today, it used to be that in order for you to start off and be successful, you had to work. Let's give the example of my Russian friend.
Okay.
You came to this country, and you had to start working, and you would have to work for a generation. Very, very hard, tremendous sacrifice to save a nickel and a dime and a penny and a dollar, and finally get to the point where you might be able to go from running a small cart to a tiny store, and then your next generation would be able to go to a larger store and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Today you can come with nothing but brain power and ambition, and literally in a few years, not even a generation, you can be financially independent. This has never been possible in all of human history.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people still think in terms of working hard, saving their money, accumulating real estate, and so on. But the critical natural resource is the resource between your ears.
Right. Now, I want to ask you this. Imperfect and perfect. In other words, you go to a company where it's completely defined, or you go into a situation where there is no definition. Why is it that you make more or earn more money when you're in an imperfect situation and it's not defined?
Well, it's very simple. If you were to ask anybody listening to this, what is your job? Well, the answer is your job is problem solver. Irrespective of what your title is, you are a problem solver. And the reason is because where there are no problems, there are no jobs. And where problems are simple, they can be solved by machines. So therefore, every single job is an opportunity to solve problems for someone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the starting point.
Right.
Therefore, the more complex the problems, the faster the problems, the more rapidly changing the problems, and the more competent you are at dealing with these dynamics, the more you'll be paid. And there's a basic principle that says that you will always rise to the level of problems that you're capable of solving.
Right.
So whatever problem you solve, problems are inevitable and they're endless. We live in an endless chain of problems. Whatever problem you solve simply qualifies you or disqualifies you
right.
to solve even more complex problems.
Right. Now, when you say problems, you also mean challenges.
Problems, challenges, difficulties for our customers, our bosses, our friends, our homes. Everything in life is a series of difficulties, without which, by the way, life would be extremely boring.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's why my life is so exciting.
Yeah. Remember, everyone has problems and difficulties. The only question is how effective are you at dealing with them and coming up with a better solution?
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying.
Interesting point. If you again, looking at how effective people think, you find that effective people have two ways of thinking. First of all, they always think about the solution rather than the problem. It's a very hard thing to do because problems are enormous and overwhelming, whereas solutions are distant and like points of light.
Mm-hmm.
But the habit of constantly thinking about the solution keeps your mind positive and alert and creative.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is that superior people think about the future rather than the past. They constantly say, okay, what do we need now? What's the next step? Where are we going? What do we want to accomplish? Okay, that was then. This is now. Can't cry over spilt milk.
Mm-hmm.
They keep their minds working and focused on the future rather than the past, because the past is inevitably full of problems and blame and everything else. The future is inherently positive and optimistic.
Right. You can't change the past.
You can't change the past. You can learn from it, put it aside, and get on with it.
Where does the present come in? Under the Christmas tree?
Well, the interesting thing is that, again, very successful people have a very intense now orientation.
Right.
They're very focused on the present. They're very clear about their long-term goals, but then they're very focused on the most important thing they can do now to contribute to achieving that. So most successful people are very, very focused in the moment.
Right.
Really happy people are very centered in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And successful people are focused on it. So one of the things we find that if you want to be more effective is you must become very, very knowledgeable in time management.
Right.
This program that we're going to be doing in Long Beach
right.
Next Friday and Saturday.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that now. Yeah, sure.
Well, we've taken the very, very best ideas in 15 years of training, materials that I've taught to about a million people, and I've taken them from all of my best programs and books and courses, and I've put together a two-day course, which is probably the most complete and comprehensive personal and professional development program in the world.
Right. Let me just read some of these seminars that you've done. setting business strategy, leadership, the critical difference, the excellent manager, how to hire, how to fire, delegating and supervising, motivating people towards peak performance, negotiating strategies and tactics, executive training, success secrets of self-made millionaires. When do you have time to live life? You're writing so much.
I practice what I preach, and so I organize my time and my life so that I get an enormous amount done.
Wow, it's amazing. Peak performance women, how to raise healthy and happy and self-confident children, creative job search. I mean, Brian, it goes on and on and on. But and of course, the form, to me, the basic of them all is the psychology of success, and the psychology of achievement, and then you also have the psychology of selling, which to me are the underpinnings of everything.
Yes.
And then you put together a program called the Universal Laws of Success and Achievement, which I live by. It's my Bible.
Yes, it's based on 5,000 years of research, going back to 3,000 years before Christ. It's just basic principles that have been learned and relearned throughout the ages and practiced by all successful people.
Right. So basically now, on day one, you're going to be covering the qualities of master achievers, managing yourself and others for peak performance, how to make quantum leaps in your sales and business career, time empowerment, persuasion, negotiation, influence skills, maximum selling strategies, the importance of self-image in selling, and success and self-motivation. That's just the first day.
Right.
And the second day you're going to cover, now the second day is on a Saturday, the magic of self-direction, personal strategic planning for high performance, how to set and achieve goals, communication, master skills, building powerful relationships, achieving financial independence, 21 traits of self-made millionaires, achieving success in family and business, leadership, and the critical difference. Those are amazing topics.
Yes. And people who've been through this program are just say it's the finest program that they've ever attended in their lives. And fortunately, many people have attended a lot of seminars, but this goes beyond them all. We have an 86-page workbook that accompanies this so that every single key point is written down in notes. The workbook alone is worth the price of the course.
Excellent. And by the way, you also have three different types of pricing, but I am fortunate enough to get the VIP ticket, and that means I get to eat lunch with you, right?
Exactly.
Will you cut my food?
Yeah. Well, the wonderful thing is that today the key to the information age, the key to developing the human resource is knowledge and skill. Now, you can get this knowledge and skill by yourself.
Right.
You can spend years and years and years through trial and error and on-the-job learning and reading a book and listening to a tape. Or you can come to a course and spend 2 days with me,
right,
where I will teach you what has taken 100 years of research. And I've gone and spent about 30,000 hours doing the reading and research and then assembling it and synthesizing it, and then taking it out and teaching it to more than 500 companies and more than 1 million people, and then taking the best from that based on feedback, and then distilled it into this course.
Wow.
So what this course will do is in 2 days, it will give you what it would take you 10 years to learn. And so what happens is people come out of this course, and within a year, they're accomplishing more than people who don't take this course would have accomplished in 10 years, mm-hmm, or maybe even a lifetime, for that matter.
Well, let me ask you something. Is this something that they're really going to learn, or is it something that everybody has deep inside us that you're going to bring out and set free?
Well, there's two answers to the question. There's a saying that from Galileo that says that you cannot teach a person something they don't already know. So what happens is people who come to this course have a certain life experience, so they can recognize the validity of these ideas. If a person has no life experience, like if you try to teach this to 12-year-olds or 15-year-olds, they might not get it because they don't have anything to hook it into.
Mm-hmm.
But the people who come to our courses are people who are experienced in life, so they relate to it. But the second principle is, imagine I gave you a combination lock that was on a box. I said, in the box is everything you want. All you have to do is open the lock. Well, the first question you would ask is, what's the combination?
Mm-hmm.
What we do in our seminar is we say you can be the most brilliant person in the world with the greatest ambition and enthusiasm and determination, but if you don't know the combinations, you're going to spin the dial forever.
Mm-hmm.
The reason people underachieve in America is because they don't know the combinations. And what we do in our course is we teach them the combinations that have been discovered by tens of thousands of other successful people. Here's how this works. Here's how this works. Here's how this works. you don't have to spend your life spinning the dial of life trying to figure out the combinations. You can simply come and get a whole list of combinations. There's probably about 10 to 15 sections in each day of the 2 days. So mm-hmm. you end up with 86 pages, probably 500 ideas, and more combinations than you can imagine. That workbook then becomes your handbook for great success and achievement. You don't need anything more than that, plus the audio tapes that are available. And in the next year, you'll do more than you did in the last five.
Right. Well, you're an established author. You're on Nightingale Conan. Anybody could call Nightingale Conan to buy your tapes, or they could call your office directly. And I believe that number is 619-481-2977.
That's correct.
And you also have an 800 number. May I give that out?
Sure.
800-542-4252 or 800-542-4252. We're talking with Brian Tracy, amazing guy, coming up here at the Long Beach Convention Center. This the dates, I believe, are the 12th and the 13th, which it would be a Friday and a Saturday, 2-day seminar. Amazing to be with Brian Tracy. Brian, I need to go backwards a little bit in this interview and talk to you a little bit about, you mentioned about appearance, and there's something that I wanted to know about you. How many red ties do you own?
Well, I have ties that are red, burgundy, a variety of different colors.
Right, because it seems whenever I've seen a picture of you, it's a red tie, but I've noticed it's never the same tie.
Well, what I found for my own coloring, my own complexion, I wear either gray or blue suits because they are the most effective suits in business. They have the greatest authority, and they also have the greatest credibility. Mm-hmm. And the very best way to offset, and I always wear white shirts, so the very best way to offset those is with a colorful tie.
Right.
And red is a very good tie because it's eye-catching, it's stimulating, and it balances out to the overall look. But I began studying dress something like 20, 25 years ago, and I was astonished to find the small changes in the way that you dress will make enormous changes in the way that people respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize this. I've given advice to people, small advices in the way people appear and the way they carry themselves that have taken people from mediocrity to being the top people in their organizations, especially in sales.
And that the trick is to wear a red tie, white shirt. Now, should we wear a pinstripe suit, or does it matter?
No, again, there are a series of rules, but they are dependent upon your particular coloring.
Right.
There are some people who look much better in gray or blue, or other combinations, and there's some people who look better in others. The main thing is that there are some basic rules, and that's why I say you should read and study on the success of, on how to dress for success.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't know these rules, then the instant you walk into a room, you'll be downgraded.
Right.
People, we say birds of a feather flock together. You have to look at who your very best customers are and look at the way they dress.
Mm-hmm. So now, what would you recommend for somebody who's coming to the seminar? Would you recommend
seminar, dress comfortably.
Mm-hmm.
You can dress casually when you come to the seminar. Some people wear business dress because they're comfortable in it. But this is going to be very much a 2-day learning experience. It's very fast moving, by the way. There are ample breaks throughout. People at the end, when I tried to wrap up the seminar at 5:00 on Saturday after 2 solid days, and just delete some of the last material because we'd run out of time. And everybody in the audience was absolutely adamant that we keep on going.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was no fatigue. Everybody wanted more. I said, well, you know, we could go on. They said, well, let's go on. Let's do another day. I mean, let's continue to 9 or 10 o'clock at night. The material is really exciting material.
Mm-hmm.
And so since it's going to be 2 full days, dress comfortably.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're a powerful speaker. You know, our original plan was only to do a half-hour interview. We're going up to 45 minutes, and I've got so much I want to talk to you about. I'm just staggered. My own imagination is staggered with questions. I have something that I've noticed you many, many times in pictures. You always have such a beautiful, clean-shaven face. And one of the things that I ask some of my guests is, what are your personal habits for shaving? How do you maintain? Do you cut yourself when you're shaving? Do you use electric razor? What's your secret to shaving?
No, I just use an electric razor. Just get up in the morning and dress and shave and go to work. I don't even think about it, Cash.
Do you use an electric razor? Do you use a?
I use an electric razor.
And do you put anything on your face special? Do you use creams or?
No.
Wow.
No, I'm very basic.
Very, very basic. Wow. Well, I guess my chapter of the book of How to Shave from Brian Tracy is going to be limited to just like two sentences.
Right.
Any particular razor you use?
No, just an electric razor.
Well, very, very good, because you always look immaculate. You always are.
Well, if you're going to get a photograph taken, you might as well look as good as you can.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you sleep in a suit?
Yeah. Well, one of the final recommendations I give in all my courses is get serious. Quit fooling around with yourself in life. The reason people are not a great success is because they have not yet crossed the mental bridge and decided to get serious about their field.
Mm-hmm.
It can be one of two reasons. One is they lack confidence in themselves, so they feel if they hold back and they don't achieve anything, well, it's okay because they really didn't try. Second of all, they could be in the wrong field. They just don't like it that much. And so I say to people, if you don't like your current field enough to want to be the very best at it, it means it's the wrong field for you. It doesn't mean it's the wrong field. It just means that if it doesn't grab you and pull you, if it doesn't totally absorb you, if you don't want to be really good at what you're doing, then it's probably not the right field for you. And life is too short to waste a minute of it doing something that you don't love to do.
You're so right. Brian, in closing up this interview, which has been just one of the most amazing interviews I've ever had, and I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure so do my listeners, and I hope everybody goes down to the convention center to see you this week. I want to ask you about dreams. How does somebody realize what their dreams are? How do they know what it is that's right for them in their life? How do we go about doing it?
Well, it's interesting. Everyone is built with a success mechanism. And this success mechanism you can call your intuition, your superconscious abilities, your affinity with God. You can do whatever you like. But by listening to your inner voice, you will always be guided to do exactly the right thing for you. So with regard to dreams, we say to people, we instruct our audiences to do a 5-year fantasy. In a 5-year fantasy, we have people close their eyes and just relax and just project themselves forward 5 years and imagine that their entire life is perfect in every respect. And then look around them in this mental state and say, what does their life look like if it's perfect in every respect? What is their level of health? How much do they weigh? What kind of home do they live in? What kind of income do they have? What kind of status or level do they have in their field? What kind of people do they work with? What is their family relationships like? What kind of car do they drive? How much money do they have in the bank? If their life were perfect in every respect, we engage in what is called blue sky thinking, which is a characteristic of superior people. They allow themselves to project forward and just to fantasize. And then they look around and they get a very clear idea. If my life were perfect in every respect, this is what it would look like. Then they open their eyes, and they simply write it down. Then they come back to the present, and we say, all right, now, what would I have to do today to begin moving from where I am to where I want to be in 5 years? What would be the first thing that I could start to do more of? What would be the first thing that I could start doing less of? And then as you begin to that forward momentum, we say that happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. As you begin to move toward making your future reality a truth, you start to feel happy. You start to feel good about yourself. You start to have high self-esteem. You start to feel powerful. You start to have a flow of energy. You start to feel control of your life and your world. And you find throughout the ages, all successful men and women begin with a dream. And then they come back to their reality, and they begin to draw lines between where they are and where they want to go, and then they start off.
What can I say? Brian Tracy, you're amazing. I have one more question for you. If there was anything that I could ask you that I haven't asked you to end this interview, what would that question be and what would be the answer?
Well, the one question that I get asked a lot is, could you give our listeners one idea on how to be successful? And so I'll give you the answer. The answer is accept complete responsibility for your life. Decide exactly what it is that you want to do, and then throw your whole heart into doing it very, very well. If you do those three things, accept that you're where you are and what you are because of yourself, decide what you want, and then put your whole heart into achieving what you want and refuse to give up, you'll have a fabulous life.
I'm speechless. It's brilliant. That's Brian Tracy. You can see Brian Tracy on the 12th and 13th at the Long Beach Convention Center. If you need any information whatsoever, call the station here, or you can call up the telephone number. And what is that telephone number? The telephone number to call for more information on the seminar. I'm sure there's a number here somewhere on this brochure. It's a big, beautiful brochure. Let me give you, here's the number, 800-929-0434. Again, that number is 800-929-0434 to find out more information about the seminar, buy tickets, or whatever. We've been talking with Brian Tracy. Brian, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time, and I hope everyone got as much out of it as I did.
Thank you, Cash.
Okay, it's been great. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the convention center.
Thank you.
Brian, thank you so much. Okay, Scott, that's the end of that. Okay, Brian, I just got to tell you, this was spectacular. Spectacular.
Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
I really, really, truly appreciate it.
I appreciate you taking the time. I look forward to seeing you next week.
Yes. I have two things that I need to ask you right now, and, of course, I will number one is that we have one more day to go. Actually, there's tonight and tomorrow all day. Would it be possible for you to do a quick liner for me so that we could promote the show better?
What did you have in mind?
Scott, basically what we...
Okay, Brian, this is what you want to do. What you want to say is, hi, this is Brian Tracy. Join me on the... what's the name of your show now, Cash?
It's called the Cash Landy Self-Motivational Comedy Experience.
Okay, so it's going to be something like, hi, this is Brian Tracy. I'll be joining Cash Landy Friday night on the Cash Landy Motivational Comedy Experience right here on AM 1230 KYPA.
Well, actually, we got to say the time. This Friday, I'll be this Friday.
Okay.
This Friday evening. Let's see the date. What's the date this Friday? The 5th, right?
Let me see here. Yep.
Yeah.
It's the 5th. Go ahead and just kind of write down what you want him to say. And...
Yeah, that's basically all you. All okay. I need you to say is that you'll be on the Cash Landy Self-Motivational Experience on KYPA this Friday. Well, you have to actually, he doesn't have to say the call letters at the end, does he?
Oh, well, whatever way it comes out, we'll.
Brian, the only information that really needs that you'll be on the Cash Landy Self-Motivational Comedy Experience Friday, the 5th of September at 7 o'clock.
Or you could do a back and forth with him. You could say, hi, I'm Cash Landy, and he could say, and this is Brian Tracy, and then you could say, join us both on the Cash Landy Motivational Comedy Experience Friday at 7 on AM 1230 KYPA.
Well, let's try both ways, okay,
all
Brian?
All right, the tape's rolling, so.
Yeah, Brian, go ahead.
Hi, this is Brian Tracy, and join me at 7 p.m. this Friday night, September 5th, on the Cash Landy Motivational Experience.
It's the Self-Motivational Comedy Experience.
Okay, Self-Motivational Comedy Hour?
No, the Self-Motivational Comedy Experience.
Let's try it again. Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and join me at 5 o'clock. I'm sorry. Let's Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and join me on September 5th at 7 o'clock on the Cash Landy Self-Motivational Comedy Experience. I'll be looking forward to seeing you and hearing you then. Oh, let's go do it one more time. Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and join me at 7 o'clock Friday night, September 5th on the Cash Landy Self-Motivational Comedy Experience. I'll be looking forward to talking to you.
I'll tell you what, let's do it. Let's do it the other way too as well, okay? Okay. Okay, you gonna play with me, Brian?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. Hi, I'm Cash Landy.
Hi, I'm Brian Tracy, and I'm looking forward to being with you, Cash, on Friday night, September 5th at 7 o'clock on your Self-Motivational Comedy Hour.
Perfect.
Do the lockout.
What?
Do the lockout for me.
What does that mean?
That means this Friday at 7.
Okay. This Friday at 7 o'clock on KYPA. This Friday at 7 o'clock on KYPA.
Okay.
Hey, join Cash Landy and Brian Tracy this week on my okay, well, we got it. Brian, one other thing that I need to ask you, and Andy Watley, you know who Andy Watley is? He's the general manager of the station.
Uh-huh.
He had expressed to me that if the interview had come out well, which I know it has, he would like to air segments of it on a national level.
Right.
Can we do that?
Sure, absolutely.
Perfect. God bless you, man. I will see you. I am so thrilled. I don't know what to tell you, but thank you, man. I mean, everything in my life really is a direct derivative of what I've learned from you. And you know, I can't tell you how I felt when I was asked to be on your video. And it's just the you know that's all I could say.
Thank you, Cash.
Thanks, buddy. I'll
Talk
see
you later.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye bye.